Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. I mentioned last night, for those of you who were listening, that I thought it was time for me to remind everybody one of the reasons that I'm doing this show. So I decided to read Heart to Heart again tonight. Two wrongs do not make it right. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. He ain't heavy. He's my brother. What goes around comes around. All of these old sayings indicate that we, as a people, realize the importance of caring for one another. So what is the problem? Why do we continue to do harm to others? Every day in my personal life, I come across angry, hurt people who, for whatever reasons, pass on their pain to everyone they meet. We are not designed to harbor hatred and anger. We are designed to be functioning at our highest level when we are balanced. Balance is created by our nourishment, which includes food, conversation, and interactions. Since we all know we cannot change anyone but ourselves, that is where we must start. Even in the animal kingdom, where it is often survival of the fittest, there is a ring of respect for territory and family. Respect and a sense of fairness must be recovered and applied to our daily lives. We need to really consider how our words and actions affect those around us. Often during a conversation with someone struggling with a health challenge, I learn of deep emotional scars, old words or actions that have been left to fester and get stronger than they were ever meant to get. Letting go is always harder than it sounds. So today, right now, we must make a conscious effort to stop inflicting those wounds. Sadly, it's often to those we love the most. They forgive us more quickly, but they seldom forget. And saying you're sorry is nice, but not as nice as never having to say you're sorry. These sentiments are not to preach to others, only ourselves. Imagine a world where everyone endeavors to be the best that they can be. Till next time, from my heart to yours, Renee. Now, as most of you know, if you've been listening for a while, I wrote that right after my grandson was hurt. But one of the things that I don't think I've shared with most of you is I was also going through a bit of strife where I worked. After a very, very long time, many years, as a matter of fact, I was in charge of the staff and of all of the managers, everyone at a very, very wonderful, wonderful, life-saving, life-altering place. And we just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So, of course, with bigger comes bigger problems. And often comes situations that there needs to be rules and regulations that weren't really necessary when this place was a little bit smaller, running a little bit tighter to the cuff. And then all of a sudden, we were really big. And of course, when you get really big, other people often in charge of other information and other legalities and what have you, get involved because you get their attention. So to make kind of a long and, for me, sad story, shorter, I left this place. I didn't feel like I any longer fit in a place that I had, in my heart and in my head, helped promote, design, organize, and grow. Very, very difficult for me to leave. Very, very difficult. And This place is still an amazing place. I send people there every day. When someone calls me and tells me they are on the brink of some health disaster, the first place I tell them to go is here. However, I want to share with you that other adults that were involved in this workplace, in an endeavor to look like they were doing a better job, like they were a better person, like they were smarter, like they were more on top of their game, tried to defame me instead of making themselves look better, which would have been fine for everyone concerned. They tried to make me look worse. Now, I want to say to you that this is what's happening out there every day, in every circle, in every circumstance. This is one of the things that we have to fight against. Now, this past week, some beautiful things have come my way. Some of them I've shared with you, the story about the young man who was going to shoot a basket and didn't make it, and everybody was like so thrilled just because he got the opportunity. And then when another team member threw him the ball and he made a basket, I watched it on my computer and I could feel the energy in that basketball court that was like, gave me goosebumps. So we know that we are more than capable of being kinder and nicer. If you're working in a place right now, or if you're a kid that's a part of a team or an organization like what we talked about last night, which is so helpful for you to be a part of something that you feel like you really belong to, and it even happens in those scenarios. So I don't want to make light of this. If people are pointing their finger at you to take the attention off of them, you need to make sure somebody knows it before the story gets so old that people believe it. It's not a nice thing, and it's not an easy thing to deal with, and it's certainly not an easy thing to share, because then it starts looking like you're being a big baby and you can't take care of yourself. I went through all those things. I remember feeling that way about everything. Oh, I'm overreacting. Oh, don't be silly. Everybody knows I wouldn't do this, or everybody knows I would do that. But in the end, the people who were relentless in trying to make me look like somebody I wasn't won. And it's a shame. So, and I know that it happens every day. I know I'm not the only one it's ever happened to, but I feel like it's okay for me to talk about it because I know about it firsthand. So in Heart to Heart, even though a big part of it was about friends of my grandson ganging up on him and being so hateful to him and hurting him so badly, that has all different levels. All different levels. And when we go to the balances created by our nourishment, which includes food, conversation, and interactions, that can be as silly as somebody saying to you that you think is your friend and is looking out for you, as looking at you and saying, God, are you putting on weight? I mean, come on. What kind of thing is that to say to somebody? If you're doing that, why are you being so mean? Why are you saying things that you know are hurting someone else? I don't understand why you would do that and hurt somebody else. You have to stop doing things like that. Or how about this one? Geez, I saw your husband the other day talking to some girl. I never saw her before. Who was that? That's pretty hurtful too, isn't it? It could have been his sister, for all you know. But you found it necessary to tell me about it or tell you about it in an attempt to hurt me. And it probably worked. All of those things feed in to the anger that starts growing inside of each and every one of us. all of the words that we say, all of the things that we notice about other people, sometimes it's just nicer to not say anything. And sometimes it's better for you as well. Now, the other thing I want to talk about today, but I'm going to bring in Shelley because she'll help us discuss this, is a movie. And I don't know whether a lot of you have seen this movie. It's an older movie. It's called The Butterfly Effect. And The Butterfly Effect really, really got to me because I really understood how every move, every word, every action you make sends your life in a different direction. And in The Butterfly Effect, that's proven time and time again. It was so meaningful for me when I watched it that I watched it 3 times in a row just so I could really understand the idea that it was trying to get across. And I think I did, and I think it meant more to me than it may have meant to other people. Maybe other people didn't take it quite so seriously. But the ripple effect is tremendous. If you think about putting your finger in the ocean here in South Florida and know that somewhere all the way across the sea, that you putting your finger in the ocean has sent a ripple from here to all the way to the end of its journey. And you never know where it's going to land, who it's going to affect, nothing. It's an amazing thing when you think about your words and your actions having those kind of repercussions. I brought Shelley in. Are you there, Shel?
Yeah, I'm here, Rain. How you doing, hon?
I'm good. We don't have such a great connection tonight.
Yeah, hang on a second. Let me try something. Yeah. Can you hear me a little bit better now?
Yeah, that's better. That's better.
Okay.
There was lots of wind and interference. So have you heard what I've said so far?
Yeah, I lost you there for about 30 seconds, but then I got you back. Yeah, I understood your entire train of thought there.
Okay. So like I said, I think that along with all the things that we've talked about in the kindnesses or the unkindnesses, the effect that they have on people long term, kind of goes along with everything I've talked about so far tonight. And I showed the butterfly effect where I worked. And some people were upset by it because it had sexual scenes in it. And I was so disappointed because I thought to myself, you know, these are people who are taking charge of their life. They're doing the things that they need to do. So I was disappointed that they saw that instead of the message that was being sent out by this movie.
Right.
And I think that the message could change a lot of lives, could really, really change a lot of lives if people would just understand that sometimes one simple sentence in a 3-year-old's ear can change who that 3-year-old was supposed to be.
That's right. Well, when you think about your impact on people or people's impact on you, I think most people have experienced, you leave your house for work in the morning and you're kind of in a neutral mood at that point. You're not happy, you're not unhappy, you're just kind of like, in your routine, trying to get to work. All right, somebody cuts you off on the road, flips you off, or gets behind you and is tailgating you and honking their horn, any kind of aggravation like that. Now you're tense, you get to work, you're upset. The first person you see, you bite their head off. But conversely, if you're driving along and then you stop at a light and you see somebody, running out in the middle of the road and stop you, and they take one of these little turtles and they carry it across to the side of the road, and you see this act of like good Samaritanism and somebody trying to, you know, to save an animal, and it kind of puts you in a good mood, it puts a smile on your face, or somebody looks at you at a traffic light and smiles at you, and now all of a sudden you're in a good mood and you get to work, and the first person you see, you say, well, good morning, how are you doing? I hope you're having a good day or something. You know, it's like it almost sets the pace for you. These perfect strangers that have nothing to do with you, and yet their 3-second interaction with you can actually set the tone for how your day goes. And then you have that effect on everybody that you first come in contact with. And that's an actual, you know, real-life example of what people go through every day by allowing themselves to be affected by other people.
Well, and let me say, when we say allowing themselves to be affected by other people, I'm not absolutely positively sure that they allow it. I think it's kind of an involuntary reaction. If somebody, now, if you're just watching something else and it's not directed at you, absolutely, then you might be taken on something that didn't have anything to do with you, and maybe that day something else has already happened and made you react in a different way or take it more more personally. But if somebody directs something at you that hurts you, I don't know that we have a choice about reacting to that. Maybe we do, but that would be harder for me to believe.
All the research I've done, because I was fascinated by that, because you know that when you first met me, you know, like I talked about this before, that, you know, I had certain things happen to me, and I was very angry about certain situations in my life that never were really resolved. I'm not upset about them anymore, but there were many, many years that I was, that it almost lived with me on a day-to-day basis, and it made me very... you know, very quick to heat, so to speak. You know, I would flare up very easily. I would get angry very easily. I would calm down very easily because I do really care about people, but I would get angry too easily. And so I was fascinated by books about that particular personality trait, about allowing people to hurt you, about allowing people to make you angry. And I had a hard time wrapping my brain around the fact that it is a choice. When you allow someone to hurt you, that's why I'm using the word allowing. When you allow someone to hurt you, or you allow someone to make you angry, it isn't just a knee-jerk reaction, but I would say probably the majority of people think it is. I think most people believe they can't control that, and yet it is something that we can control. And when you do, when you start choosing whether or not you're going to let somebody get you ruffled, okay, you start having a much happier life, because you can literally refuse to take on something that somebody's trying to put on your plate. Somebody says something to you that's hurtful. If you understand that, first of all, what they're saying probably isn't true anyway, all right, and they're just saying it to be unkind, the moment you wrap your brain around that and you realize that somebody who's being unkind is not in a good place, and you feel compassion back towards that person, don't accept it, don't feel bad by what they said, instead feel bad for them, well, not feel bad, but feel compassion for them, you've now released it. You're okay, and you've kind of put it back on their plate, and when they see that they didn't get a reaction out of you, now it's squarely stuck back in their experience to deal with, and then they're either going to have to let go of it or deal with the frustration that they were trying to put on your plate. But it's very empowering when you get to that point.
Well, and I agree that that's the way to go. All I'm saying is that there aren't very many people out there, even people that I would consider really balanced and really on top of their game and really in a pretty decent frame of mind all the time. If somebody says something to you that you know good and well is not true, is so far-fetched that it's laughable, that's one thing, to hand it back to them and just look at them and laugh. That's one thing. But it's when there's some question, it's like you don't tell. To say to somebody who's very, very thin, oh, my gosh, are you putting on weight? they aren't offended by that because they know damn good and well they're not putting on weight. You say that to a person with a weight problem, and you've really cut them to the quick in that instant. If somebody says something to you about the fact that they saw your husband with somebody and you know that you and your husband are going through something, and what they're saying could be an honest truth, you're hurt. Those are the kind of things I'm talking about. People who just say mean things that don't have any significance whatsoever, to knock that back into their ballpark, I think a lot of people can do, and I think a lot of people do that. It's when what I'm talking about is the things that are true, and they're the ones that hurt. The ones that aren't true don't bother you a bit. You know?
Right, right. And especially when it's said by somebody who should be careful. If you have a perfect stranger or somebody that you're not really friends with say something, a lot of times people can just blow that off. But when it's somebody that you trust and love them, and then that person takes something that you confided in them and throws it back in your face, those are the times when it's very, very difficult to make a choice not to be bothered by it. It's because then you're going very deep-seated, and there's a lot of other emotions coming into play more than just a comment, because now it's a bigger hurt, because not only are you reacting to the comment, but you're reacting to the fact that somebody that you trusted and confided in would do that, you know. So it's both the deed
exactly.
and the emotion behind the deed that you're reacting to.
That's exactly it. And again, like I said, it's often where it leads you. It's not always in the moment. Okay, you hurt my feelings. You gave me a lump in my throat. I walked away. I got over it. I moved on. I did whatever I needed to do that day. And at the end of the day, let me rephrase that. 3 hours later, I've forgotten what you said to me.
Right.
And then 7 hours later, I'm in that place that this particular comment was about.
Right, right.
And it's on my mind. So now it may make me make a stupid decision.
Mm-hmm.
And one that I didn't need to make, one that didn't even need to be there. But because of something you said to me 6 or 7 hours earlier that I sloughed off, didn't give a whole lot of more conscious consideration to, after I got past it, I was past it until I was in that situation that reminded me of it. And that's what the butterfly effect did. When that guy would wake up, he didn't remember. All he knew was that he fixed something terrible that happened. Do you remember it?
I haven't seen the movie. Now I'm intrigued. Now I want to go out and get it this weekend.
Really? Oh, my gosh, Shelley. You will get a lot out of it because you will understand what it's about. There's a whole bunch of innuendos about why he does it and everything, but that stuff isn't what I concentrated on. I concentrated on he'd end up someplace after waking up, and he'd think, oh, my God, I have to go back. If we hadn't done that day, then she wouldn't end up here or this wouldn't have happened. So he goes back to that place, and he changes what took place that day. And then when he comes back to his life in present time, everything's different. And sometimes it's worse.
Right.
So it not only teaches you about the decisions you make, every word you say, every action you make, sends your life off into a different pattern and into a different path. It also tells you that sometimes, as hard as it is to imagine that something that's really hard for you to take happens, and oh my gosh, wouldn't it be nice if I could make that different, it doesn't help because it was the way it was supposed to be.
Right, right.
And
sometimes in trying to fix that, something else down the road ends up being messed up even more and
yes.
ends up being worse because that other incident needed to happen in order for that the other worst situation not to happen, you know, something along those lines.
Yes, absolutely. And that is what just struck me as being so amazing, you know, because if you think back, I mean, like I said the other day, I'm 64. There's lots of things I don't even remember about my life, to be honest with you. But if I think back and think about little decisions I made that had a lifelong either good lifelong pattern or a consequence,
mm-hmm.
I can remember some of those things. And I think that I think most of us can if we think back. But the biggest reason I'm talking about this is because I want the adults to understand that even though they're still on their own journey, being a grown-up doesn't mean that you've quit growing and quit learning and quit doing all the things that are good or bad or change your life. But once you're in charge of a young person, or any young person that looks up to you for whatever reasons, I want you to think about what your words and your actions can do to that kid. In the grocery store today, I saw a woman grab a, I don't know, 6 or 7 year old, and she said to him, "I cannot believe you did something so stupid." Now, there's probably a million, trillion, gazillion times a parent said that to their kid, maybe more. However, when she said it, I turned around, I looked at the kid's face, big tears in his eyes, and I thought to myself, why did she have to put it quite that way? Why did she have to say it with such a mean connotation? Why couldn't she have just said, please be more careful, you could have hurt yourself? Instead of, why did you do something so stupid?
Yeah, I know, because then that almost sets the tone where you're telling that child that he is stupid. You know, I mean, they take it to heart, and then they start having a lack of self-esteem. It actually damages their self-esteem when you put it that way. You know,
that's right.
Instead of treating them like they're a smart kid who just did something that's not smart, you're actually telling the child that the child's not smart. Not
that's
that
right.
They did, because that, you know, like you got distracted, you weren't paying attention, you know. And when you put it on a level that you want them to pay more attention because you want them to be safe, it shows that
mm-hmm.
you care for them. But when you put it on
mm-hmm.
that level, it's almost like you're telling the child you're ashamed of them. You know, how could you be so stupid? You know, it's so derogatory on so many levels, and I don't think parents realize when they just allow something to pop out of their mouths like that, how it just damages the child's self-image. And,
exactly.
And very
well, and the word stupid just is, well, and I could be the only one that feels this way, I don't know, but for me, it's a terrible word. It for me, and maybe that's because of something that was said to me, I don't know. If it was, I don't remember it, but I do know that I hate that word. And for me, that word is hurtful. But the other night, before the show started, AJ, who I've mentioned to everyone, of course, Shelley knows who that is, my grandson who's 6, he was here with me and with his grandpa and with his uncle. And he came to me at about 6 o'clock and said, Noah, that's the young boy across the street, could play, could he go over? So we have a rule. He gets to go over as long as he remembers that he has to be home before it gets dark out because he has to cross the street. Now, our street is a dirt road. There's not a lot of activity on it, but sometimes somebody's driving too fast. And when it gets dark out here in the acreage, I mean it's dark. So gets to be 6:30, and I come out of my office and I say to Grandpa, did AJ come home? No, he didn't come home yet, and it's almost dark. So I went outside and yelled his name. He didn't come. So I got in the car because it's getting close to radio time, and I knew I had to get back in here, so I jumped in the car. It's just like kitty corner across the street, but across the street out here in the country is a little bit of a walk. So I got in the car, and I went over, and I knocked on the door, and the Nana over there said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize it was dark. They're having so much fun." And I said, "No problem, you know." So I get him home, and we're in the car. He says, "Am I in trouble?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Are you going to ground me?" And I said, "I have to think about it." So we came home. He went in and sat down and was looking at his library book. And I did the radio show. And he came to my office when he knew it was 8 o'clock. And he came in and he said, "Am I still in trouble?" And I said, "I'm not going to ground you. I'm not going to punish you for being late. I just want you to know why I get so upset." He says, "You get upset because I didn't do what you told me to do." And I said, "Well, that's part of it. But the other part of it is that I get worried, that I didn't want you to come running home, knowing that you might be in trouble, not paying attention to what you were doing, and run across the road and not pay attention to if a car was coming or if there was traffic out there or anything." I said, "And then if something happened to you, what would I do?" And he said, "Nothing happened to me, Graham." I said, I know. And I'm very grateful for that. But the reason that I'm so strict about you doing those things is because I don't want anything to happen to you." Now, I would like to tell you that that's the way I've always handled everything. It is not. There have been times when I've gotten mad at the kids and really raised hell because they've scared me or made me worry. But I try when I've had, especially since that night, and this is always smart, my grandfather taught me that. That if you're really mad at a kid, you should not deal with them right then. You should go away from them, walk away from them, and then deal with them after you've calmed down, which is a very, very smart thing. But he needed to know and understand more than anything why I get worried. And now I think he gets it. Now I think he really understands what happened and why I was so worried. But, you know, again, that's not always so easy to make happen. Are you there, Shell?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. I think I lost you a little bit on the dashboard. Anyway, but you see my point. He was all prepared for me to yell at him, and I didn't. And I hope that it made... you know, instead of him being angry, because that's the other thing, little kids, you know, they get angry and they feel like they hate you, and you don't want all that happening between you either. You know, you want it to be more of an idea of why you would be upset and worried rather than they're just mad at me.
Right. And the other thing is that. And then we discussed this a little bit the other night, but it's very important that parents, any adult that's in a child's life, whether it be an aunt or an uncle or a teacher or whatever, they shouldn't compare children to their siblings. They shouldn't say, your sister is so smart, why can't you be like her? Or your brother is so good in sports, why can't you be like him? Because each child is going to have their own special gifts. You might have one child that's a jock and another child that likes science and wants to get into things that are more intellectual, you know, and where one's going to be more sports oriented, you know. They both have their own unique gifts. And what happens when a parent or a teacher, and I know people that have had this happen, and it affected them into their adult life. It affected them when they were trying to get jobs and things like that. They almost had a sense of lack of worth of what they had to offer to people because their brother or their sister was always fawned over for their particular gifts, and they always felt they were lacking when they weren't. They just had different gifts, you know.
Exactly,
And sometimes parents try to live... You know, like maybe the father had a dream of being a major athlete, so his one son is an athlete, the one who wants to be a brain, the father almost acts like he's disappointed in him. And that's something that that can really lead to terrible self-esteem issues as those particular kids get older.
Well, that's for sure. And you're right. I have seen a lot of parents do things like that. And they're not doing it because they want to hurt their child. That's for sure. They're doing it without, you know, thinking about it. But you can't compare kids to each other. We are all totally and completely different.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
So, if you were to well, you don't have kids, but you do have nieces and nephews that you are very fond of and that you've helped with a lot through the years.
Mm-hmm.
When you know that they're going through something and maybe they're not talking to you about it right away, do you think it's a good idea to pursue that and try to get them to talk to you, or do you think it's a good idea for you to wait and talk when they open up?
Well, what I do is if I see that they're going through something, I will let them know that I'm aware of it,
mm-hmm.
and I leave it up to them, depending on
mm-hmm.
the severity of what they're going through. You know, I'll
mm-hmm.
say, look, you know, I can tell by the way you're acting that you're upset about something. You want to talk to me about it. In fact, I just went through this with my great niece a couple months ago. And she didn't want to talk about it. And I said, okay, you don't have to. So if you do decide you want to talk about it, I said, I will listen. I said, I'm not going to judge anything you would have to say. And I said, and it's healthy to kind of get things off your chest, I said, by talking. So what I did is I talked about talking about it without the subject, but I tried to explain how healthy it is to talk about it. And in having that conversation, she lightened up a little bit. And she ended up talking to me about what was bothering her a little bit later on, and then I was able to give her some advice. But but I didn't press her on it. I didn't try to get her to tell me. I just opened the door for her to be comfortable to tell me, and we let it go with that, you know. And I've done that with my other nieces and nephew when they were younger. They always felt that they could come to me, and it was comfortable for them, and it was comfortable for me. And from time to time, they would come and they would talk to me about things because
mm-hmm.
we had a good relationship. You know, but I was never judgmental. But they also knew that I was honest. You know, sometimes they would share things with me, and I would tell them and say, well, you know, you kind of brought that on yourself. And I would, but I would be kind about it. I wouldn't be, critical or treat them like they had done something that was awful. I would just very calmly explain to them that, okay, no, this wasn't right, what was done to you, and then I would give them some constructive advice, or I would tell them, well, you know, you sort of put that on yourself and make light of it so that they would make light of it and kind of take some of the stress out of it for them, you know, depending on what the situation was,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
mm-hmm.
It helped them to kind of deal with whatever it was on a better level. But, yeah, but I would put it to them. Now, if something was happening that was dangerous, if they were being threatened or if something, you know, like that was happening, then I would be a little bit more insistent. I would say, I want to know what's going on right now. I don't want it to escalate. You need to tell me what's going on. And then I would be a little bit more authoritative with them. And because they respected me, they would kind of follow suit and just, you know, and then be more open and tell me what was going on. So it was a judgment call depending on if it was something of a minor issue or something that was a little bit more critical that they had a potential of escalating.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now what if they're 16 and they don't care what you think? They love you, they respect you, but they're pretty sure now that they're 16, they're smarter than you are, because that happens.
Oh, yeah, it's happened with all of them when they hit that, because I do have, you know, every one of my nieces and nephew went through that stage when, you know, like my IQ must have dropped in their eyes about 80 points, and they all became geniuses, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
I mean,
mm-hmm.
It's just something that happens when kids turn 16, all the adults around them become morons, you know.
Yep.
But,
all right, so you're at that point. So then how do you get through to them?
Well, I'm a very consistent person with them, and what I would do is I would be as loving as I could, but I would basically tell them, say, look, you think you know all the answers, and I would come right out and I would be very blunt with them, and I say, you don't. I was 16 months before. You don't seem to realize that. Say I didn't pop out, you know, 35 years old. Say I went through exactly what you're going through, and I said, I'm telling you right now, I'm concerned that you might be making decisions that are going to make this situation worse for you. Say, mm-hmm. I really want to talk to you about it. And then sometimes I would just talk at them. If I couldn't get them to listen to me, I could at least, they respected me enough that they would at least keep their butts in the seat. And then I would just talk at them, hoping that mm-hmm. something would kind of sink in, whether they wanted to admit it to me or not. I was, and sometimes that's exactly what happened. They would not admit to me that they accepted anything I said, and yet I noticed that some of their actions did change, in relation to a couple of the comments I had made, you know, and sometimes that's how I would deal with it. But sometimes they didn't want to talk to me, so I went into kind of like a lecture mode, and they did have enough respect for me that they at least sat through that.
Well, and the truth of the matter is just like what I just said a few minutes ago. A lot of times if you can mull over something that's said to you, and that goes with good stuff as well as bad, a lot of times it loses some of its severity unless you come into the situation that instigated a remark, and then sometimes you have trouble dealing with it. But you're right, and sometimes they have to hear what an adult has to say, and it should always, 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 and I don't know how to stress this any more than that, be done with love and kindness. It shouldn't mm-hmm. be done like you're talking to somebody that you don't care about.
Exactly.
And I think of all the advice I could give to anybody, when people come and say to me, well, what do? I have somebody right now that I'm counseling a lot. And whenever they say to me, you know, well, I'm going to do it, and I say, listen, first of all, get rid of some of the meanness, buffer off the way you're feeling, and talk to this person. Don't you love this person? Well, yeah, but I'm just better, and I say, well, you have to talk to them like you love them. Otherwise, everything you're going to say is just going to sound mean and angry, and they're not going to hear any of it. They're just going to be angry that you're talking to them like they don't deserve your respect. So being hateful and being mean when you're trying to get a point across to somebody doesn't work. It doesn't help.
Right.
It doesn't change their minds. All it does is get them defensive. And once somebody goes into defense mode, they are no longer listening, I guarantee it.
Right.
And they surely are not taking your advice anymore, because now they're in this defense mode and they're thinking about how they're going to stick up for themselves the minute your mouth shuts. Stuff is going to come pouring out, and a lot of it won't be very nice, because that's how
right.
they'll think they have to handle it. So it doesn't serve any purpose to be like that. It does
right.
serve a purpose to make somebody feel like you really care, and that you're really interested in what is happening to them, and you really want to help them through it. You understand that they're having trouble making good decisions. You've done that yourself. We've all done that ourselves. And you just want to be there for them so that from now on, the decisions are made with a little bit more thought. You're not going to change their decisions. And if you tell them that you will, that's going to annoy them as well. You're just going to say,
right.
I just want to be there for you so you got somebody to bounce all this stuff off of. When you're thinking about
right.
doing something, if you're worried that it's not going to work, it's nice if you have somebody to bounce it off of.
Right.
So all of these things,
even
work for grown-ups.
Exactly. Well, like at one point when my nephew, the one who's in the Air Force now, he's stationed in Germany, well, he went through a period there when he was 16, 17, he was very angry, all right? All he kept talking about was moving out of the house and being on his own, and, you know, and now you look at him, and he's this big mush, and he's a dad, and he's got two kids that he just, you know, the sun rises and falls on his kids, and he's such a sweet, loving father, you know? But when he was a young guy, he had some anger issues also. And I remember once he was getting very, very disrespectful with my sister and stuff, and I had come for a 2-week vacation. I was living in New York at the time, and they were down here. And I didn't like when he was talking to her. It was like really ticking me off. I've never heard this before, you know, how disrespectful he was being. So I couldn't take it anymore, and I finally called him out on it. And I said, look, I said, I love you very much. I said, you're a sweet guy. I said, my feelings towards you haven't changed. I said, but I don't like your behavior. So I didn't put it on him. I didn't tell him that he was becoming a bad person or that he was becoming disrespectful. I said his behavior was. So I tried to, and that's how I got him to listen to me. But if I started screaming and yelling at him and saying, you know, who do you think you're talking to? How can you talk to her like that? Blah, blah, blah. He would have just gotten angrier and shut me down. But what I did is I spoke to him with respect, trying to instill respect back from him. And it did calm him down over a period of time. He didn't flare up. He didn't get angry with me for calling him out on it. And he was much more careful, at least when I was in the room, you know, but that's one thing, that's one piece of advice that I would give parents or teachers or anybody that has to admonish a child for doing something that may be out of character for them or that's irresponsible or unkind. Put the description on what they did, not on them. Don't say they're stupid. Say, you know, boy, what you did was not a very smart thing because you could have gotten hurt. You know, you've got to pay attention to what's going on. But don't say that the child's stupid. You know, put the description on what they did, not on them. And first of all, it doesn't injure them. It doesn't make them feel bad about themselves. And especially if you come into it and say, look, I love you very much. I don't want you to get hurt. But what you did wasn't very smart. You know, you're uplifting them and correcting them in one breath that doesn't injure them in any way.
Okay, so one of the things that I would say to you is that I wouldn't even go with that wasn't very smart, because kids are smart and they'll say, oh, so you're telling me I'm stupid. That's right where they'll go with that. So,
yeah.
So you want to go more along the lines with, you know, I don't think you thought this through because this wasn't the best idea you could have come up with. I know it. This could have caused this and this could have caused that. And another thing that I think helps, especially very young. Now, 16-year-olds are a breed all their own. And
yeah.
It's a whole different scenario when you're dealing with them. And I think it has to be on a very, very individual basis, meaning that what will work for one, chances are, will not work for the other. So you really have to know a child before you start, you know, trying to get through to them so that they understand you. Because, like I said, they're just all so very, very different. And how they accept things is so very, very different. But in most cases, they don't like to think that they have, this is what I've found anyway, and I'm sure it's not true of all of them. Again, like I said, they're too different. But one of the things that I see they don't like to do is they don't like to hurt people that they know they love. And that seems to be a good place to start sometimes. You know, you don't love your sister, you don't love your mom, you don't love your dad. Well, yes. Well, gosh, if I didn't know everybody and I just walked into the room, I'd think your dad was your arch enemy. You know, I can't imagine.
Point.
Yeah, I can't imagine how bad you're hurting his feelings. You know, and
yeah,
he'll probably never tell you because dads don't tell you stuff like that, but you have to be really, really hurting his feelings. That seems to get through to kids a lot because they don't think of themselves as the one that hurts the feelings. They think it just gets done to them.
Exactly, exactly. And I know exactly what you mean, and I agree with you on that. That's a very good point.
And I think if we do that and give them the opportunity to change that around, then they feel like they did it on their own. You know, they made a good call and they made their reaction was one of repair instead of despair. And often, that's everything. You know, that's really, really everything. So I think, you know, it would be really, really nice if you could just, you know, like I remember Dr. Brothers and Dr. Spock and all of them. And when I first started having kids, everybody gave me all those books and everything. And I was like, these would be fine, you know, if you could really say to yourself, yeah, you know, this sounds just like my kid. Well, it might sound like one of them, but it never sounds like all four of them, you know. So you're, you know, you're right back in the mess where you began if you try to treat them all like they're identical, because they're not. One kid, you know, you could, I always tell everybody this, Spike, he was such a quiet and good boy. If I put matchbox cars in one in each pocket, I could take him for doctor's visits anywhere. He never made a peep. He'd just sit and run the cars up and down the couch and be good as gold. Michael, on the other hand, you could tie Michael with bungee cord around something and he'd figure out a way to get out of it and get into something. totally different child, completely. Always very good natured. None of my kids were bratty, said the very proud mother. But they were all, you know, they all had their own personalities, absolutely. And which is not to say that they didn't do things that they shouldn't have done, but they were never bratty about it. I, you know, so it was easy for me to sit off and talk to them. But again, I didn't know then what I know now. And I did what I saw other people do. So I know I made mistakes, and I know I did things that I shouldn't have done. And but, you know, there, you can't cry over spilled milk, I guess. You just have to try to do what you can do to make things better when you realize what you've done wrong. But in helping people today, the people that are listening and that tune into the show and are looking for a little bit of guidance. Last week we had a mom and her little girl, and they're talking about being nice to others, and she brings it up at home and they discuss it and everything. And she said that really helped me, having you talk about what we were talking about. You know, like it's not just mom that's making me do this. Other people are talking about this as well. So I do think it will make a difference if kids hear other people talk about being nice, and if kids see other people being nice, it's going to make a difference.
Oh, sure, because you can't help, especially even teenagers, they do emulate a lot of what they see around them, even some of the behavior that they don't like, which is kind of ironic, but you know, like they'll be being screamed at by their father at home, and they hate it. And then they get to school, and then they're screaming at other people because it's learned behavior. And even if they don't like it, they end up emulating it. The same thing if they see people being decent, if they see people being kind and warm to each other, they're going to absorb that. They're going to emulate that as well because it'll get their attention. You know. And that's why it's so important. Then you're going right back to the ripple effect then, you know. It's not just, you know, it affects everybody. You know, your kindness to one person can affect 50 people that day. Because everybody you're kind to then feels good when they leave you, and then they're kind and they're a little calmer, the next person. And then when that person gets home from work and they see their kid, they walk in, they walk over and they give them a hug, you know, instead of walking. Saying, you know, growling at them because they're laying on the floor doing their homework or something, you know what I'm saying? So, you have no idea when you're kind to somebody how many other people you could actually be being kind to in the same day.
That's right. Well, that's a nice way to look at it. When you're being kind to one person, you, through the ripple effect, you're being kind to many. I love that, Shelley. Mm-hmm. That's perfect.
Yeah.
That's perfect. And that talks about everything that we talk about, because that's exactly right. Because of the ripple effect, Every one person that you're kind to, you can count on both hands how many other people that day are going to feel the repercussions of that kindness. That's beautiful.
Exactly. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. You know.
Go ahead, sweetie. Go ahead.
No, I want to hear what you're going to say.
Well, I think that the more people realize how simple that is, how that's not a big chore, how that's not, it's not like, oh, my God, how am I going to do that? It's like so easy, so easy. And they're going to say to themselves, imagine how much fun you could have thinking after you do something nice for somebody, imagining to yourself how many things are going to reproduce themselves throughout the day for any number of people that you've never laid eyes on because of one nice thing. What a great game to play.
I know. It is funny to think about it. And the whole thing is that I've actually seen things like that happen, you know, where I've seen somebody come in a really good mood, joke around, you know, like with an office full of people, leave, and now everybody in the office is in a really good mood, and then somebody needs help, and then the person next to them is like, just, you know, runs over and gives them help, you know, and you see that the residual effects of that, that one little stop in for like 30 seconds and joke around with somebody, it just changed the whole demeanor of like 8 people in an office.
Yeah.
And I sit back and see, and I notice things like that. You know,
mm-hmm.
So I'm like a people watcher. You know,
I am too.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I've seen it the other way also. But we're talking about the positivity, and I've seen it when one person does something that's kind of like out of the box a little bit, and it just uplifted everybody. And it doesn't last for 10 minutes; it lasts like for almost the whole day. It just sets the tone for the day. You know, and that's kind of a neat way to look at it.
Well, it's a great way to look at it. And it also, you know, everybody, I've been trying to leave everybody with something to try every night when we close the show. And I'm thinking it would be great fun for everybody tomorrow whenever they leave their house or they're at their workplace or they're in the hallway where they work or whatever they're doing. Or maybe they're at home all the time now and they're retired. But when they go to the grocery store, when they go to Walmart or wherever they're going, if they try to make eye contact with everybody and at least nod their head and say hello or smile and see how different it, first of all, makes them feel. And secondly, watch to see what kind of repercussions it causes.
Right, right.
I think they'll be surprised, don't you?
Yep. Yeah. Well, it's funny.
I mean, there will be some people who look at them like they belong in a straitjacket. I know that. You know, there will some people look at them and walk away and say, I don't know what he was looking at. I don't know him. There will be some people like that, but they won't all be like that. Some people you'll make their whole day.
Well, you know, it's funny because I had one of my coworkers came up to me recently and she said, she made a comment because I'm always smiling. And that's what she said. She said, you know, she says, I got to tell you something. She says, I get such a kick out of you. And we don't even work in the same department. We really very rarely speak to each other, but we pass in the hall all the time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She told me, always smiling. And she says, you know, we never talk or anything, but she says, every time I see you, it just puts me in a good mood for an hour, you know. She says, because she seemed to be so happy-go-lucky, you know. And I said, well, I said, I sort of am. I said, but it's by choice. I said, sometimes I'm under a lot of stress or I'm having an issue with something and I can be in a mood. And I said, but you know what I do? I said, the minute I see somebody else, I said, if I'm having a challenge or stress or I'm in a bad mood for some reason, I said, to be honest with you, I really don't like sharing that with other people. So the minute I see somebody else, I said, it just automatically makes me want to smile because I don't want to share whatever stress I'm going through with somebody else. And I said, the funny thing about it is the minute I've smiled at somebody else, I all of a sudden feel better.
You feel better.
Yeah. Yep. And she cracked up laughing and she says, oh, I love that. She said, so I make you feel better when you smile at me? I said, yep. And she goes, well, isn't that cool? it was just a fun conversation we had, you know, but it was just funny that, you know, how I put it to her and she got a kick out of it, you know.
Well, and it is. It's very contagious. Well, that's like, You've been around me and the kids before when I start giggling, and pretty soon everybody in the room is just listening to Grandma laugh and laughing. So it is contagious. Laughter is definitely contagious, and so are smiles, and so is good-natured behavior.
Yep.
So we'll leave it on that note, and we'll try that tomorrow. I am certainly going to try it. I know Shelley will, and I hope you listening out there will give it a shot and see if it doesn't up your day, make your day just a little bit nicer, a little bit better, and maybe make somebody else's day a little bit nicer. Until then, though, this is Renee from Heart to Heart, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Good night,
Shel.
Good night, Renee. Good night, everyone.
Good night, honey.